From the Gettysburgian and 91.1 WZBT Gettysburg, I'm Jamie Welch, and this is On Target.
I'm Ben Pons. Today on Target, we'll talk about the college's new branding strategy, the Senate's new conference amendment, and the conservatory's new director search.
Then, we'll have a lengthy discussion with Nick Arbaugh about conferences, free speech, and more. Stay with us.
All right, well, welcome to On Target as my microphone is collapsing on me. That's lovely. In any case, our first item up for debate, more accurately up for discussion, is that the Gettysburg College Student Senate recently on its meeting at its meeting on Monday passed an amendment to the bylaws that would change the way they fund conferences. Specifically, it would limit funding to $275 per attendee. That's up from the previously proposed cap of $200. But this is the first cap. And this amendment passed after Nick Arbaugh, who is a senator from the class of 2020, so I guess that would make me a constituent. In any case, Nick Arbaugh whipped some votes all day on Monday, made some amendments, and secured passage. I believe everyone except for one voted in the affirmative. So we'll talk to Nick a little bit more about the amendment later in the program. Suffice it to say that this is yet another of the fiscal reforms that Arbaugh proposed in an editorial to the Gettysburgian earlier this fall that have been widely supported, including by Senate President Luke Frigon, and certainly, I think, are moving Senate in a new direction. I think there's a lot of discussion over whether that is the right direction, and we'll get into that with Nick a little bit later in the program. But yes, interesting stuff coming out of the Senate.
Absolutely. In other news, a couple weeks ago, the research firm Dartlet visited campus to learn us how to talk about Gettysburg.
I don't think they want us to talk about it like that.
Probably
learning
not.
Learning us how to talk about that there Gettysburg.
Probably not. But they came, presented to various campus constituencies what they believe the true personality of the human that is Gettysburg College is, and presented us with a messaging guide of how to tie our messages into our personality storylines. It's all very interesting stuff. A lot of the stuff that they talk about we're already doing, but one thing that they did mention is we are not talking about our historical past enough. They feel that we have this great asset here with the battlefield and all the history, and we are just not talking about it in our messaging at all. And so that was one of the key points that they were pretty much scolding us about. So that was interesting.
Well, I'm pretty old. I know a lot of people around who are pretty old, and you could say historical, so maybe that's not quite the message. I'll have to read and see if I can connect that to a dimension.
Yeah.
And then to one. So let's say I have a fact such as the Gettysburgian has been around since 1897. Walk me through how to make that a Dartlet approved message.
Yeah. So if the Gettysburgian has been around since 1897, you could elevate that to a dimension. Now, that dimension, probably the one I would select, just thinking off the top of my head, would be historical. So you would talk about how the history of the Gettysburgian helps to inform the future by allowing us to reflect on the past, and how through the Gettysburgian and through the work that we do here, we're now elevating to the storyline, we are able to create purposeful change by reporting on things happening on campus and make that change. So that is sort of how you would elevate it to the storyline. I didn't have the exact phrasing in front of me, but one of the key elements is that we are a campus that inspires purposeful change.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Well, so that's that. And the other item I wanted to make sure we brought up was the Sunderland Conservatory of Music is currently in the process of hiring a director to replace Kay Hoke, who will retire at the end of the year after, I believe, 10 years of service to the college. Four candidates have visited campus over the past 2 weeks, and we published an article in this week's print issue about that. And there are some concerns that are being raised by particularly music students about, you know, whether these candidates have enough vision for the future of the Sunderman Conservatory. Particularly, some students have students who are engaged in performance as a music major have expressed concerns over how a community rooted in performance is being attained here at the college. Another item of news, hot off the presses, it literally just came into my email as we spoke, was that this afternoon the college held a commemoration, a celebration of life service for the 12th president of Gettysburg College, Gordon Holland, who died earlier this fall. Just a couple of quotes from that event. College president Janet Morgan Riggs said, "There, quote, there is no doubt that I would not be president today if Gordon had not reached into the faculty and picked me out. I'm very grateful for that most days." And former president of the Board of Trustees, David Levan, chair of the Board of Trustees, said, "I don't think I've ever met anybody that had the sense of people that Gordon had." A number of speakers shared memories of Gordon Holland. And Levan said, quote, "Gordon would be the last to take credit for all the things done during his tenure, but he knew exactly the right thing to do at exactly the right time with exactly the right person." So the legacy of Gordon Holland living on at Gettysburg College. And now for today's Sounds of Sunderman segment, we'll be featuring music from Gettysburg College's recent jazz concert celebrating 100th anniversary of Ella Fitzgerald.
Tisket, a tasket, a brown and yellow basket. I sent a letter to my mommy, and on the way I dropped it. I dropped it, I dropped it. Yes, on the way I dropped it. A little girl, we picked it up and put it in her pocket. She was trucking on down the avenue with not a single thing to do. She went peck, peck, pecking all around. When she spied it on the ground, she took it, she took it, my little yellow basket. And if she doesn't bring it back, I think that I will die. A tisket, a tasket, I lost my yellow basket. And if that girl it don't return it, I don't know what I'll do. Oh gee, I wonder where my basket can be. Oh gee, I wish that little girl I could see.
So do we.
Oh, why was I so careless with that basket of mine? That itty bitty basket was the joy of mine. A tisket, a tasket, I lost my yellow basket. Won't someone help me find my basket and make me happy again? No, 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 no. No, 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 no. No, 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 no. Just a little yellow basket. A little yellow basket. Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen.
What a great selection there from that concert. Fantastic concert. You can check out the full concert, livestream.com/Gettysburg College. And now I believe we have Ben Ponce with our bullet report.
There's been a lot of Gettysburg College sports action since we last did one of these. This is going to cover every winter sport that we've had since November the 11th. On November the 11th, the women's swimming team defeated Susquehanna 138-123. The women's basketball team lost in an exhibition to the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, 72-45. The women's swim team defeated McDaniel 110-69 on the 15th. The men's swim team also won 128-51. The women's basketball team defeated Lehman 74-65 on November the 17th. The men's basketball team played Moravian and Hunter in a tournament. Unclear how those games went. It's not on the Gettysburg Sports website. We'll have to look into that. The men's basketball team did lose to Bridgewater 75-77, defeated Hunter 60-54. The women's basketball team defeated Virginia Wesleyan 55-52. At the Division III Women's Lacrosse Championships, we covered those in print. Some great action there and a great end of the career for Elizabeth Hillfrank, our co-sports editor. Congratulations, Elizabeth. On November the 18th, the men's swim team defeated Ursinus 147-115. The women's swim team lost to Ursinus 184-78. The men's wrestling team defeated Alderson Broadus 34-13, and they also defeated Penn State Montalto 57-0. Scranton 27-15. The women's basketball team defeated Franklin Marshall 71-58, while the men lost 68-53. The men's basketball team lost to York 83-59. The women's basketball team defeated Johns Hopkins 73-63 on November the 28th. The men's basketball team lost to Johns Hopkins 68-57, also on November the 30th. At the Petrofs Invitational, the men's wrestling team finished 4th out of 15. The men's basketball team on that same day, December the 2nd, defeated Washington College 86-70. The women's basketball team also defeated Washington College 63-42. At the Gettysburg Invitational Swim Meet, the men's swim team finished 1st out of 5, and the women's swim team finished 2nd out of 6. The women's basketball team lost to Elizabethtown 77-54, their first loss of the season on December the 4th. The men's basketball team lost to Dickinson 73-68. The women's basketball team defeated Dickinson 85-52. The men's wrestling team lost to Messiah 38-3. Messiah, of course, number 5 in the country. And finally, yesterday, the women's basketball team crushed Bryn Mawr 65-31 as Ashley Guerin led the way with 21 points. Thus endeth the Bullet Report.
That was an exhausting one. That was so.
I am truly exhausted. Arguably, I'm more exhausted than those athletes after they finish their games. I'm just dripping in sweat over here.
Absolutely dripping in sweat. What a pro voice athlete you are, Ben. Thank you for that contribution. Quick note, I'd like to take a moment to recognize Ari Snaverson, our features editor, who will be graduating this week at the mid-year graduate recognition ceremony. I believe that's on Wednesday.
It is.
At 5 or 4:30. Not sure when. Check it out, gettysburg.edu. Come out and support our fine features editor who has served us very well over the years, and we're sorry to see him go, but we wish him luck as he goes on to future endeavors.
And I will be having a dieting downturn without his weekly content.
Yeah, I don't know what we're going to do without. I don't know what we're going to do without our fitness content weekly, I guess we have to find somebody else to fill those shoes.
Congratulations, Ari. We'll be right back with Nick Arbaugh. We're joined today by Nick Arbaugh, senator from the class of 2020, who's on a plethora of committees, including, budget management and opinions and policy, and most recently, most notably, recently, that's a lot of adverbs.
Sure is.
Recently shepherded an amendment through the Senate's, I don't want to call it an arcane process, but why don't we say interesting process that restricts how much funding clubs can get to send their people away from Gettysburg College. Now, as a matter of principle, I think we should be sending more people away from Gettysburg College on a regular basis.
Oh, boy.
But I suppose in the context of conferences, when we're doing it, when they're going away on my dime and your dime and Jamie's dime and everyone else, as we wave to the DPS officer who just waved to us,
Officer Pierce.
A regular fan of On Target, I suppose. I don't know. Anyway, so tell me about what was in the amendment and what got you interested in this issue.
Yeah, so thanks for bringing me on, Ben. It's great to be here, finally. Join the ranks of my idols here at On Target.
We have such an esteemed guest list. Yeah. I'm sure it's something people across campus are clamoring to be a part of.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, so the amendment originally was the work of a plethora of ideas coming out of the Budget Management Committee that was sent to Senate Committee, and I worked with, or Senate Policy Committee, and I worked with Policy Committee to put it into writing, basically to cut costs. I mean, that's been our theme all year. We've been looking to save money a little bit here, a little bit there. And also, conferences tend to be bigger fish. They cost a lot of money, and they to send 10 people off to conferences not in Gettysburg, and we wanted to address that by kind of bringing the benefits more home. And so in order to do that, initially we proposed a $200 per person cap on spending for Senate money. We had clubs would be responsible for half of the kind of registration fee for conferences. And then we had a couple other clauses that basically just said you have to advertise to the whole campus, and then when you come back, you just need to talk about what you learned at the conference. And that can be as simple as just addressing it once in your club meeting. So we weren't trying to hurt people with that. But we just wanted to bring the benefits home and lower the costs.
And over the course of the process of getting this amendment through, I know some changes were made. And in fact, the day that it was voted upon, which I guess was it just last Monday or was it the Monday?
Yeah.
Just last Monday, I ran into around lunchtime in Servo, and you were furiously telling, you told me that you were whipping votes, you know, like our very own Nancy Pelosi. Maybe that's not the
I don't appreciate that.
The representative you want to be compared to. But in any case, so what changes had to be made, and how did you go about building a coalition of support for your amendment?
Well, it certainly didn't start with getting as much Botox as Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, boy. Oh, my.
This is getting a little bit off the rails.
So the initial version of the amendment, which had been in the works for nothing short of weeks, and it was all common knowledge. These are open meetings. Anybody can come look at this stuff. Roused some intense ire, especially from what I like to call the big club lobby, and that's Model UN, Model Arab League, College Democrats, College Republicans. You know, and these are clubs who obviously have a vested interest. They're going on conferences, so their voices should be heard. But we had a heck of a backlash from those clubs. I know Model UN had a huge problem with pretty much all of it. College Democrats president Marley Swanson had a lot of problems with everything. They came out 2-3 days before we were supposed to vote on it with these joint statements and putting out all this stuff in email and on Facebook that were some of which was more or less true, and some of it, in my opinion, was just blatantly false. But anyway, we, as Senate, we have to take into account what clubs think, especially with an amendment that's so tailored towards these specific clubs. So they came and they told us what problems they had with it, and they really did a lot to, for lack of a better phrase, put the fear of God in some of the younger senators, especially, that you need to vote against this. Like, you know, I mean, it tends to be with freshman senators. They're new. You know, they don't know how it all works, so... yeah, College Democrats especially, College Republicans, really worked to just say, you know what, table it, don't do it, no matter what, don't even consider a bunch of changes until we tell you what we want to put in the bill. And that was a huge roadblock for us. And I really wanted to get this amendment passed because I think it's a great amendment. And so I had to work several hours that day talking to people, trying to get different opinions, different factions, including from the College Democrats, Republicans, about how exactly we're going to get this measure through.
Mm-hmm. And Jamie has the statement that you mentioned. It was co-signed by Marley Disney Swanson and Haley Gluhanich, the president and co-president, respectively, of College Democrats and College Republicans, respectively.
Yeah, so the statement talks about a lot of things, specifically that they argue that requiring students to fund half of the cost of registration would disproportionately affect low-income students. And I believe that you addressed that by getting rid of that provision that they had to fund 50%, right?
Yeah, we did get rid of we dropped the half provision, but, I mean, that's pretty much Exhibit A of stuff that's just blatantly not true. The amendment very clearly said that the clubs would be responsible, not the individual students. And we felt when drafting it that, listen, we earlier this year we passed a fundraising amendment that provided avenues to raise funds for this kind of stuff. Very few other club, you know, or very few other schools outside of ours have their clubs take no dues in whatsoever from people. I mean, and the idea that we were trying to, and this was brought up, the idea that we're a bunch of rich white guys trying to target the poor segments of the Gettysburg student body is just ridiculous, and I addressed that in Senate, which you can see on the Gettysburgians Facebook page.
Yeah.
A little shameless plug.
Yeah, there was a bit of a little snapping outburst from somebody when you mentioned that, and Luke had to tell them they were out of order, so that was interesting.
Yeah,
there were actually several times where Luke had to bang his gavel and tell people to stop talking. I know Jack Lashendock, who incidentally is the president of the International Affairs Club or whatever, and Model UN, he obviously was outspoken about against this amendment, and he wanted to raise it up to the limit up to $350, which is more than we currently spend on all conferences like in the last year. So that was interesting.
Yeah. So Jack Lashendock is pretty much, and listen, he's a good guy. I think his heart's in the right place, but when I talk about big club, he's in the pocket of big club.
Oh,
I mean, he's fighting for his own interests, and that's what you got to do. But yeah, he had a very interesting negotiation style. He said, you know, I want to introduce a ceiling of 350 with the idea that it'll be negotiated down to 300.
Yeah, I don't know why he chose to just lay all his cards on the table at once. I'm not really sure if that's was the best strategy for him, but
well, evidently it didn't work.
Yeah. So on the subject of big club, the statement from Marley Disney Swanson and Haley Gulhanich says that there wasn't enough input from clubs. As a matter of fact, they specifically said that no clubs were consulted in the creation of this amendment. I'm not sure how aware you are of whether clubs were or were not consulted, but was that assertion accurate or not?
It's just more ridiculousness, to be honest. I mean, these are, as I said, open meetings. We were publicizing. Pat McKenna, the parliamentarian, says at the end, Senate Policy Committee meets this day. Come look at it. People know that we're cutting costs. We have members of College Democrats on the Budget Management Committee. We have members of Model Arab League on the Policy Committee. You know, I'm a member of College Republicans. I'm in both. The idea that it seems to be a misnomer that clubs weren't consulted as much as the particular president and co-president of certain clubs didn't directly get a letter in the mail.
And let me just jump in here. Thinking about the conferences that have recently been funded, the ones that come to mind from this fall would have been that Model UN was allotted $4,700 thereabouts for 17 students to attend a total of two conferences. By my math, that works out to about $275 per attendee. The College Republicans were approved to go to the Conservative Political Action Conference, CPAC, once again. I believe that was about $3,000 for 16 attendees, which is roughly $200 per attendee. So do you foresee this amendment causing wholesale changes in the way that conferences are funded? Or do you just see this putting a cap on things to prevent further growth in the money that's spent?
Yeah, no, I can't see any tremendous impact of the amendment other than that it's going to address, I mean, like you mentioned, the College Republicans budget that came before us. We really worked hard with them in Budget Management Committee to cut that down because it used to be a lot more, and we've done that with every club and every budget that's come before us this fall. So I can't see a tremendous difference other than we're standardizing the process. They're going to know that this is the rules, this is what we're going to expect, and that way we're not it doesn't seem like we're just making up rules each time a club comes to approach us for funding and stuff like that. And yeah, like you said, Sarah Berkowitz, the treasurer, put the numbers up on the board in Senate. There are only a small, small handful of events that this even really deeply affects. And those are events that were, even when they were passed, they were highly controversial. I think Pre-Vet had one. And maybe one of Model UN's conferences was also kind of beyond the pale. So I can't see this having a tremendous impact on Senate, but it will make clubs say, okay, how are we going to get this money if Senate's not going to give it to us? And, you know, are we really doing everything we can to cut costs? Because that's what we're going to start to demand from clubs.
And I wanted to ask about two specific provisions in the amendment. One of them says that before clubs come to Senate to ask for funding for a conference, that they should they need to demonstrate that they have already reached out to academic departments, other relevant campus organizations, such as the Eisenhower Institute, which I would imagine might affect some of these more political organizations. Have clubs reached out to these organizations in the past? I know that across campus in this era of the sustainable excellence budget cuts, there's a lot of cost trimming going on. Have other campus organizations shown willingness to support the costs of these conferences?
I mean, you kind of have to go on a case-by-case basis for that kind of thing. I know, I believe Jackie Crowley said this during the debate, that she approached the college and she did get that kind of money. And these departments often do have some money for these kind of things. I mean, this is stuff that really helps Gettysburg's reputation, and that's why clubs are allowed to go on them. Or rather, why they're encouraged to go on them. So the funding sources are out there, but what we haven't seen are a lot of real attempts by clubs to access those funding sources. And as Senate, we need to make sure that we are utilizing all of our resources as best as possible. And that means we need to ask clubs to look elsewhere in order to save us a few bucks, so that if we're able to save those few bucks each time, we don't have to cut a big program or an entire conference and stuff like that.
I know Jack Lashendock, I've spoken to him, and he has said that when the Model UN goes on its international conference, I believe last year they went to London, I don't recall where they're going this year or if they are going anywhere internationally this year, but that the provost's office has funded or supported the funding for those conferences. Would you be now expecting him to go to the provost's office every time he wants to go on a conference with Model UN?
Well, I believe in that case with Model UN, because it was an international trip, the funding mechanisms work differently. I'm not even sure if Senate's allowed to fund international trips. And so that in that case, the provost stepped in. But yeah, like it says in the amendment, we're going to expect them to go to the provost, go to their respective departments, go to any and all outside funding sources that they can think of, and show us that they have done so, which sounds like a tall order, but really it's just forwarding an email chain to the head of the BMC, which is the treasurer. We just want to make sure that all of our options out there have been explored, and that we're utilizing our resources as efficiently as we can.
The other component to this amendment that I wanted to ask about was a provision that I think came in as part of the amended version, which was that in extraordinary cases, this cap of $275 per attendee can be lifted. Can you talk about what might constitute an extraordinary circumstance? Are there any? Was that crafted with any specific conference in mind?
That's a tough one. I mean, that was something that when I went out and I was talking to clubs about, and I was negotiating with them what they wanted to see in this amendment, that was something that came up time and time and time again. And I suppose it's because each club thinks that their event will be the exception. But that idea, how I kind of acquiesced to it, was we need to keep a level of discretionary power and the sovereignty of the BMC in making these decisions intact. As to your question about specific examples, I mean, I can't really think of too many other than, I can't really think of too many. The case that I brought up earlier, Jackie Crowley, who went for Smart Women's Securities, they were only, there was a special circumstance with Smart Women's Securities where you have to apply, and she was accepted, and that was a huge deal and a huge honor for her to be accepted. But under this amendment, it was only sending one person. She needed like $800 and stuff like that. Well, that would be a case where maybe the BMC, and this is all up to the head of the BMC, where maybe they would make an exception for something like that, because it's so important for Gettysburg to have that representation in these kind of elite conferences, and how special of a circumstance that is.
So is there any concern that this, on your part, that this exception that's been put in will lower the force of this amendment, will make it weaker, such that, you know, if just anybody can get an exception if they want it? Do you fear that that may happen?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. But just because I fear it, Doesn't mean that it's a rational fear. I think our treasurer right now, Sarah Berkowitz, has done an excellent job with the BMC, and I don't. And that, I mean, she came in. She wasn't head of the BMC last year. She came in and she's been responsible. So if we can count on someone without that kind of prior experience as a treasurer coming in and making these good decisions, then I think we can count on a lot of people. Especially since, and this is new for a lot of people, we're working on a big election amendment right now that just came out of Amy Bosman, the vice president's election committee, which completely revamps Senate's election procedures, the size of Senate, how people are chosen. And so, I mean, right now I'm a huge supporter of it because it would allow the treasurer to be elected within Senate. And I think that would be even better. It would allay my fears even more if we have someone who I know is experienced, who knows what they're doing, making these kind of decisions. And obvious, and it says, I believe in the amendment, the literal language, it's the BMC can grant. Well, the BMC is a voting body. It's not just the treasurer, too. Mm-hmm. So while the treasurer has a lot of influence in the BMC, if a lot of people say no, 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 then we'll still be okay. And I for one, have trust in a lot of my fellow committee members and fellow senators to handle that appropriately.
So shifting gears, you just talked about the election reform, and this is the next big thing coming down the pike. And it's been hotly anticipated, and I know it's been discussed a lot in policy committee and through Amy's separate little, I guess it was an ad hoc committee that was figuring this out. Can you talk a little bit about some of the broad strokes of what that's going to look like, some things to look forward to? I know everything's not nailed down yet, but maybe you could speak in more broad terms.
Yeah, sure. So, like you said, everything's not nailed down yet. It's they've done a ton of work in her committee with it. We have a lot of suggestions that they submitted to policy committee, and we're working right now to get all of that down pat and write the language for that for the Constitution. But basically, it would, as of now, the ideas that they submitted would see the number of senators reduced to 4, and it would introduce a mechanism for clubs with particular interests. So, for example, political clubs, social clubs, cultural clubs, stuff like that, would each have kind of a caucus and would elect a voting member who wouldn't be a senator. I forget the exact term that was used in what the sheet that they provided us, but they would have the same voting power as a senator. And I think there are 7 or so of those kind of club advisory positions. And that would... A, it would address the complaints that we've had for years from club representatives saying, well, we just come and we don't do anything and we want a voice. And it would address a big problem we've been having where simply not enough people are running for Senate, getting involved in Senate. We've had to appoint an astronomical amount of people. I know in the senior class and my class. And so we're really trying to address that kind of lack of interest by promoting interest elsewhere. There's some language in there that addresses that, and also making Senate more efficient by cutting down just the sheer size of it.
And when you said 4 senators, 4 per class as opposed to 7 per class.
Yeah, it would be 4 per class, and then for people who did not make it into that 4 per class, there would be a mechanism to have them elected as well. So like after all classes have all their senators chosen, out of all of the candidates of all classes, the next, I can't remember the number of people off the top of my head, but the next several people who had the highest votes would also be elected kind of at large senators.
And kind of in broader terms, I think what, if I'm understanding correctly, based on what you just said and what I've talked with some others about, you're looking to kind of further engage the campus at large in the Senate process, you know, getting people interested in that. Can you speak in broader terms about why that is important and what other approaches Senate has to further engaging the campus community? After all, Senate is entrusted each year with spending $90,000+ of money that comes out of everyone's tuition. And I think, you know, a lot of people tend to lose sight of that it's just this amorphous pot of money, but certainly I think it comes from the same sources that all the other money around here comes from.
So sorry, just to address your question on a couple different parts. So part of that kind of...
I love multi-part questions.
Yeah. I'm an even bigger fan, so...
So for the engagement kind of side of it, we're trying to be able to reach out better towards first year students and stuff like that to tell them, hey, this is what Senate's doing, this is how we do stuff. And then a big problem with that, and that's something you addressed, is we are that amorphous just pot of money. In an editorial I wrote for the Gettysburgian, I think I described it as just kind of a pile of money that people think they can just come and take stuff from. And of course nobody's going to want to get interested in that. I'm not even interested in that. But what Senate can be and what it should be, and I think the president, President Fergone, would echo me on this, is an advocate for the student body, somebody who's actively following student interests and promoting them at sometimes even against the administration, because they're not always in sync. For example, the opinions committee that we came up with, maybe a year ago or so, I think, was Michael Mancuso's first meeting with that, has been an excellent avenue for advocating for student interests. Most interestingly, obviously you guys have been covering the campus free speech thing. Well, the Senate Opinion Committee just put forth one basically saying that we should have the same protections that a public university student would have. And I think, for one, that was an immaculately written and terrific opinion. And that is something where we're clashing with the administration, because we've had President Riggs herself said at the Senate meeting that we're not going to allow hate speech. And I think that's quite dangerous. And I think that goes against what the Senate opinion has been. And I think that kind of student advocacy for student rights and for student wants is what Senate should be about. And if we're able to get there, I think we'll see a huge uptick in interest from first years and interest from all class. When Senate truly becomes a governing body instead of just a pure bank.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Freedom of Expression Committee. As we've been reporting, that committee, which is composed of seven members, two of whom are on the Board of Trustees, one student representative, which is Pat McKenna, the chair of the Senate Policy Committee and parliamentarian, three professors, including Ivanova Reyes from the Economics Department, Hakeem Williams from the Africana Studies Department, and Jennifer Bloomquist, who's the Associate Provost for Interdisciplinary Studies and Dean of Social Sciences. I think I got all
that. It's a heck
of
a business card.
I think she needs two lines for it.
She just hands them a page.
And Jeff Foster from College Life. That committee has been working all semester on developing this statement of institutional philosophy. The most recent reporting that I've heard suggests that statement will be coming out sometime in the next month or so, possibly over winter break. They've gathered the feedback, they're working on drafting it, and then we'll be moving towards a town hall type situation come January, February, once everyone's returned for the spring semester. So it'll certainly be interesting to see where that goes. In terms of the opinion, which I believe passed pretty handily.
Yeah, I think there were two votes against.
Yeah, so Jamie, you have it there. You want to read the operative parts?
It's quite lengthy.
It is quite lengthy.
Maybe starting at "Be it resolved" on
the important parts at the bottom.
Yeah, so "Be it resolved that Gettysburg College adopt a statement of philosophy that differentiates between speakers brought onto campus and the speech of students. Be it further resolved that student speech be governed by the standard established by Tinker v. Des Moines, Supreme Court case from 1969. Speech that materially disrupts classwork or involves substantial disorder or constitutes a collision with the rights of other students to be secure and to be let alone should be governed by appropriate regulation. And second, a recognized student group may invite a speaker onto campus who espouses unpopular or hateful opinions. However, if the cost to provide security to students and to that speaker is too great, the college may choose to prevent that speaker from coming to campus.
Yeah, maybe it wasn't as immaculately written as I thought it would.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a typo there.
But yeah. I mean, certainly this comes on the heels of pivoting to another one of the hats that you wear. This comes on the heels of last spring when the Gettysburg College chapter of the Young Americans for Freedom invited Robert Spencer, who's the director of a blog called Jihad Watch, who spoke about, I believe the title of his speech was The Political Ramifications of Islamic Fundamentalism. He spoke on his views that Islam has some inherent issues, and the college community had some objections to that, not surprisingly. There was a counter speaker, Todd Green, an associate professor at Luther College, who spoke a few days before. And then during the event, there was a Muslim student solidarity rally that happened simultaneously. You are the current acting chair of YAF. Can you kind of talk about why, even if a student would disagree with what Robert Spencer's message would have been, why you think it's important that he be permitted to share his views at Gettysburg College in a college-sponsored event? He was paid, I want to say, $2,000, $3,000 out of...
I believe it was $2,000.
Out of Student Senate to come to Gettysburg.
Well, actually, what happened was, and I don't have the financial information, but what I believe happened was that the Young Americas Foundation ended up covering that $2,000 cost because... we had some waffling, or there was the whole financial aspect of it was a little bit hazy due to the timeline.
But the college did cover security costs.
Yeah, the college covered security costs. But one of the things that I want to address first is that Robert Spencer's speech, which I'm not going to sit here and defend it merit by merit. I'll let him do that. But it's important that we're able to talk about ideas. I mean, ideas including religion. If somebody wants to bring a speaker criticizing Christian militias in Lebanon, they absolutely should be able to do so. Or the theology that inspires those militias, whether or not I agree about it, they should be able to do so. And obviously, a lot of the Middle East right now is in a lot of turmoil. There's a lot of fighting. And I think it's important that we're able to address the ideas that underline that kind of fighting and stuff like that. But as to Mr. Spencer's speech specifically, I'm not going to sit here and debate each and every point he said. I didn't necessarily agree with everything he said, but I think it's important that we're able to bring speakers that challenge what we believe, what others believe. It's especially important when those speakers are out of the mainstream. And what's interesting is you alluded to the kind of the Committee of Seven and stuff like that. I'm putting my YAF hat, or rather, I'm keeping my YAF hat on for this. I'm very worried about that. I've spoken to a lot of the members of the committee at great length. I have great respect for every single one of them, but I am intensely worried that they are going to pass a philosophy with enough muddy language there that the school can basically just do whatever it wants and keep whomever it wants from speaking and squash whatever ideas that they think won't improve their bottom line or their market image. So I'm very worried about that. And I think back to the Senate's role. We talked about, so once they come out with that opinion once they come out with that philosophy, they're going to bring it to the faculty to vote. I think they're going to bring it to the board of directors to vote.
Board of trustees.
Board of trustees, that's right. And then they're going to bring it to the Senate to vote. And I asked several times the people who came to speak to us, including President Riggs, if the Senate votes no, what happens? And most of the answers I got, I'm not really sure. But President Riggs said that she couldn't imagine adopting a philosophy that the representatives of the student body disagreed with. And all I have to say to that is we had two dissenting votes on the opinion that resolutely defended the importance of freedom of speech as it exists on public universities and public school campuses and stuff like that. I don't know how she can, or not she rather, but I don't know how the administration can is then going to hand us something that doesn't align with that. When you have two dissenting votes on an opinion, I think that's pretty unanimous that the students are saying we believe in the freedom of speech. We believe that that is a core part of what it means to be on an American college, what it means to be an American, and we want to defend that. And so, depending on what they come out with the philosophy, what they come up with in the philosophy from the Committee of Seven, it'll be very interesting to see if they come out with something that that contradicts what we put in that opinion, because I think we very strongly said that we're not going to accept a lot of these regulations that you see on speech placed in other liberal arts institutions.
I don't want to get too far into discussing the merits of the issue. We can potentially do that at another future On Target interview. But just to speak specifically about hate speech for a moment, what would you say to the argument that by giving someone such as Robert Spencer, whom many argued was propagating hate speech, that by giving him a platform at Gettysburg College, there is either A, an implicit institutional endorsement by merits of the college spending money to bring him here, or B, even the that by giving him a platform that further promulgates the hate that, in this case, Muslims face in their daily lives?
I mean, this comes back to the whole idea of hate speech isn't free speech. And that is something that is completely ridiculous and very new, especially on college campuses. If we give someone the power to tell us what is acceptable speech, what opinions you're allowed to have, what kind of thought you're allowed to have, that is a very dangerous thing, and that is extremely narrowing for people's ability to think for themselves. For the Robert Spencer thing, of course the college isn't endorsing what he says, no more than they endorse what other club, what other speakers' clubs bring. I mean, that's just impossible. The College Democrats brought Kate Mishelman to talk about pro-abortion stuff, and then YAF brought Babe Buchanan to talk about pro-life stuff, and the college didn't endorse either of them, I don't think, because that would be inherently contradictory. But this idea that somehow that speech we disagree with or speech we don't like to hear, that we aren't being forced to listen to, is violence to people or violence to students, is horrendously harmful, I think, to the integrity of the American Republic and to the integrity of students.
So it is your contention, just to be clear, in contrast to what you said President Riggs mentioned, that hate speech should not be, will not be permitted. It is your contention that hate speech should be permitted even if it's not agreed with at Gettysburg College.
Yeah, well, but what is hate? My contention is, what is hate speech and who defines it?
If you get to define hate speech, should it be banned?
No, absolutely not. I mean, God has not ordained me with the power to dictate what humanity is allowed to think. There's a great many speakers who I have very fundamental disagreements with. Jeanetta Cole was the commencement speaker, I believe, last year, Dr. Jeanetta Cole. I disagree vehemently with a lot of what she has said, but obviously she has the right to say it. There's no way that we can have a democracy or a republic or any kind of government outside of that of an authoritarian one without being able to have a discourse about these ideas. And
what about speech that incites violence, which I think is what many argued, citing there was a shooting or a terrorist incident of some sort in Norway, where in the manifesto of that individual they cited what Robert Spencer has said, and thus, you know, people have argued that what Robert Spencer says incites violence. Should speech that incites violence be permitted at Gettysburg?
Well, speech that directly calls for violent action. I mean, this is something that our national governmental bodies have dictated through the years. Speech like that, it is subject to restriction. And I believe that Gettysburg should follow exactly in the footsteps of public universities in terms of dealing with that. But with as to the Robert Spencer thing, I mean, it's ridiculous to say that if some kind of lunatic, I can't remember the Norwegian guy's name, but I know who you're talking about.
Anders Breivik.
Yeah, Breivik or something like that. Just because he cites someone doesn't mean that, oh, that person should be prevented from ever speaking again. I mean, if he cited George Washington or Lafayette or Montesquieu, obviously we should be able to talk about the ideas promulgated by such great men. Or you know, if someone cites Margaret Thatcher and then goes on a shooting spree through Britain, that obviously that's ridiculous. But it all just ends up when people say that, oh, well, he was cited by this lunatic in Norway, this mass murderer, this terrorist, because he was cited, then his ideas are just too bad. We shouldn't even judge them based on merit. We should just judge them based on that one idea that someone's told us. Is amazingly close-minded, I think.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Nick Arbaugh, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
That's On Target for this week. We'd like to thank Nick Arbaugh for being our featured guest today.
We'd also like to thank the staff of the Gettysburgian and the executive board of WZBT for their support of this project. You can find On Target in iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and wherever else you get your podcasts. You should subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. Unless, of course, you didn't like this program, in which case you should not do anything.
On Target is a joint production of the Gettysburgian and WZBT. Our theme music was composed by Diego Rocha of the class of 2019, who is a music major focusing on composition from the Sunderman Conservatory of Music.